This hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by Pizzeria Antica, which strives to provide Champaign-Urbana with an authentic Neapolitan pizza experience, preparing only fresh, all-natural, non-processed ingredients in wood-fired ovens. Taking your pizza orders from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, you can reach Pizzeria Antica at 217-530-4137 and online at anticachampaign.com. That's anticachampaign.com.
All right. It is 6:03, and you are listening to WEFT 90.1, Champaign, Illinois, streaming online at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Welcome to CU Progressive News and Calendar. It's coming together here. In order for WEFT to stay relevant, according to our research and consultants, we need to have a daily local news program. In light of that, and in light of my own passion and experience making local news, I jumped into producing CU Progressive News, and for the last 10 weeks have, with help, done so. It's been fun, and there's a link to the webpage and all the stories that we have covered. If you want to see that, you can go to WEFT.org and then click on Public Affairs and then a thing called One-Offs, because it's not a a regularly scheduled program yet. But we are airing every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. live on WEFT. And then we are also on Tuesdays, added to the UPTV YouTube channel. And you can do you can find that by going to YouTube and looking for UPTV 6, because they're on channel 6. And you can look for the playlist called CU Progressive News. On Thursdays from 10 to 11, it's replayed on UPTV Channel 6, and then it's always available by a podcast. WEFT has a podcast now that you can get it 24/7, so if you want to listen to it via our podcast, that's available to you after Tuesday, so the Monday show gets put up on Tuesday. And then it's available as an audio archive at WEFT, so lots of different ways to catch that. Catch us here. We have a collaboration with UPTV, and we also have a collaboration with the IMC, the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, and their print newspaper called The Public Eye. So if you want to learn more about any of that, you are welcome to email me, weft90.1@gmail.com. And this is some of the things that we're offering for people to get involved. If you want to tell us what you would like to see covered on CU Progressive News, if you would like to provide story information or tell me someone who could be interviewed, that would be great. I'd be if you would be willing to come in and read pre-written news stories on the air, that's a possibility. If you would like to be interviewed yourself, if you would like to produce programming, be trained as a reporter. If you'd like to be involved with WEFT at all and become an air shifter, or just get the basic volunteer training at WEFT so that you can help out with this or any other show in the future, just email me, weft90.1@gmail.com. I'm Sandra Auten, and with me in the studio today is Chris Evans. Say hello, Chris.
Hello, and it's nice to be with you.
Yes. So many in the CU community are reeling from the death of their friend, Matt Farrell of Urbana. Urbana police arrested David Farrell, 66, on preliminary charges of first-degree murder in connection with the death of his 29-year-old son, whose body was found lying in the street in the 700 block of East Oregon Street, 2:28 a.m. on Sunday. Police say they responded to a domestic dispute call about 11:20 p.m. Saturday after the father reported getting into an argument with his son and being battered by his son. When they arrived, officers were unable to locate Matthew in the area. Friends are not willing to believe that Matt would have actually battered his father, so that we don't know what the real story is there. They returned, the police returned 3 hours later after reports of a shooting, and they say that the father, David Farrell, told officers that he had shot Matthew, who and they administered first aid but were not able to save him. Matt was a self-employed designer who had a space at the CoLab space in downtown Urbana. He was a graduate of Parkland College graphic design program, and he specialized in creating visual brand identities. And he was on the board of CUDO, Champaign-Urbana Design Organizations. And most regrettably also, Matt's mom, Mary Ellen Farrell, was also a beloved member of the community, and she passed away just last September with a quick-moving brain cancer. So their family is definitely reeling from all of that that's going on, and the Urbana community is as well. So our condolences go to that family. Well, wanted to report on, we're going to do some events and have some topics about criminal justice in the news, and then we're going to end with some yes we can information about things that we can do that have been done positively in the community by activists and by progressives. So this is a program that is for you if you consider yourself a progressive or want to learn what it's like to be a progressive in the political in the climate that we're in today, which is a pretty tough thing to do.
I'm wondering what it's like to be a progressive.
Yeah, are you? What does it mean anyway?
Yeah, I don't. That's a great question. I think you want things to get better.
Yeah.
For everybody. Yeah. I think that was the fundamental, and that can take all kinds of forms. But
it can politically. I always tell people when they ask me where I am politically, I say just a little bit left of left. That's where I am. So
yeah. If you know what your left is,
if you do, yeah. If you do. Well, one of the things that we're reporting on is that the third death in our county jail has happened just 2 weeks ago, I think it was. It was
third death in how many spaces?
In
time?
6 months.
6 months.
About 6 months. Local activists and concerned community members are planning to attend the county board's meeting Tuesday night at 6:30 to protest a rash of recent deaths in the Champaign County Jail. There have been three deaths in just over 6 months. All three were African American in jail, where blacks make up 60 to 7% of the daily population. On Friday, Veronica Horsted was found unresponsive in the Champaign County Jail. She was the mother of a 6-year-old and a 2014 graduate of EIU. For years, she had struggled with drug addiction. We know that she had went through drug court successfully, and she had stayed clean for quite a while, but she was a heroin addict. And she obviously was not clean. She was suffering from withdrawal. She was taken to Carl Hospital, where they cleared her to go to jail. Do you know what she was arrested for, what she was being caught? I don't know at this time either. Those who knew her say that she had a smile that would brighten a room. Also, then, some previous deaths, the other two, was one on Easter morning, March 27th. Paul Clifton, 59, was pronounced dead of natural causes after multiple asthma attacks in the jail. He had been arrested late night at his home for a warrant of driving on suspended license. After graduating from Urbana High School, he attended Morehouse College. I think that's primarily a black college in Washington, D.C. area, I think. Is that right?
I don't know about the location, but I do know it's a historically black college. Mm-hmm.
So his name was Paul Clifton. He died basically of multiple asthma attacks or natural causes. On December 1st, 2015, jail video footage showed Toya Frazier laid presumably dead in a solitary cell for nearly an hour and a half before being discovered by jail guards. She had spent the previous night screaming from the pain of heroin withdrawal. Advocates, as I said, will address the Champaign County Board during public comment on Tuesday night. That's tomorrow night, June 14th, 6:30 at Brookins Administrative Center. That's at 1776 East Washington in Urbana. And that was mostly from a report by Brian Doliner of the Public Eye. Thank you, Brian, for that information. News from the Marijuana Policy Project, dated June 6, 2016. Illinois legislature passed two key bills in 2016, including one to decriminalize the possession of marijuana. In Urbana, that happened on a local level, in the city level. There was decriminalization down with the fine down to $50. So it was already decriminalized, but the fine was reduced.
No, it's never been decriminalized.
No.
It's just lowering the fine from $300 to $50 if you're caught in possession of any amount less than 30 grams.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Lawmakers in Illinois, though, that was Urbana, which Chris just made note of, but lawmakers in Illinois passed Senate Bill 10, which would extend the medical cannabis pilot program until July 2020. Under the current law, the program is set to end on January 1st, 2018, so the extension is welcome news for the thousands of patients currently in the program. The bill also adds PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, to the list of qualifying medical conditions, which could bring relief to thousands in Illinois. Lawmakers also passed SB 2228 earlier in the session. This bill would remove the possibility of arrest, jail, and a harmful criminal record for people in possession of a small amount of marijuana. These changes would vastly improve current law by replacing criminal penalties with a fine between $100 and $200 for possession of up to 10 grams. So to clarify again, Chris, the Urbana was $50 for possession of up to 30 grams. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. But in the state now, it is fined between $100 and $200 for possession of up to 10 grams. The bill also makes improvements to current DUI laws, which today can lead to unimpaired drivers being considered under the influence weeks after consuming cannabis. And we saw that play out here locally, where there was a gentleman who was involved in an accident.
Yeah, I cannot pronounce his name. I won't even try. But he was had an accident on an icy highway. He crashed a truck. He killed someone. And it was discovered that 2 weeks prior to the incident, he had smoked cannabis and still had traces of the substance in his system, and he was convicted of DUI and sentenced to 6 years in prison.
Right.
The sentence was overturned, and he is now serving probation on the outside.
He was one of the cases that really kind of put it over the edge with Judge Klaus. Judge Klaus, and Judge Klaus got removed from the bench after that outrageous sentence.
This is one of the sentences that got, there were a number of sentences that got Judge Klaus in trouble, but this is one of them. Yes.
Mm-hmm, right. Both efforts, these bills that we're talking about, Senate Bill 10 and 2228, both efforts gained critical support from Bruce Rauner, who is expected to sign both of them. Once the bills are officially transmitted to his desk, he will have up to 60 days to sign them in the law. It says the passage of SB 10 is welcome news. So we're going back to SB 10, the PTSD one, where they extended the date for the medical marijuana. So it's not going to expire 2018, but extended it to 2020. That bill is welcome news to many patients and supporters who have worked hard to improve the state medical cannabis pilot program. High cost for providers and cultivators, early delays in the program rollout, and restrictive provisions that suppress patient-doctor participation have made for a difficult time. In addition to extending the program and including PTSD, SB 10 also makes it easier for patients to get support from doctors. While the state program still has its challenges, the bill is a marked improvement. And again, that is from the Marijuana Policy Project. That's www.mmp.org. All right. The People's Summit takes place this coming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, June 17th, 18th, and 19th at McCormick Place in Chicago. Here's a description from their webpage. At a time of tremendous turmoil and progressive opportunity, we invite you to participate in historic convening of organizations and individuals committed to social, racial, and economic justice. This weekend, after the party primary season and before the party conventions, we seek to bring together activists committed to a different kind of agenda, a people's agenda that can enhance and expand issues campaign, expand issue campaigns, and hold all elected officials accountable to popular demands for justice, equality, and freedom. They envision this summit as further deepening the relationship between participating organizations rooted in principled anti-corporate politics, development of community leaders, direct action, not based on partisan identification, and strategic organizing to build power. The summit itself will include plenary and workshop sessions devoted to key issues such as Fight for 15, that's the fight for minimum wage of $15 an hour, mass incarceration and criminal justice reform, voting rights and expanding democratic participation, attacks on Wall Street speculation to fund human needs and jobs, and climate justice toward a sustainable economy, improved Medicare for all, the fight for free and debt-free higher education, secure retirement through expanding social services, ending HIV/AIDS, achieving constitutional pay equity for women, and ending deportation and support for Dreamers, among others. That's those who were born in the United States but still didn't have citizenship. They will take action in Chicago against the big money system of politics that expands the power of the wealthy and corporations at the expense of the people, and they will also celebrate with music and a festival of joyous rebellion. Who was it that said if they're not playing music at the revolution, they weren't coming?
I don't know who said it, but I agree.
I agree. So they plan on how to make a plan to move the people's agenda nationally and locally and to help build a broad movement for people in the planet.
There's, I should give those dates again.
That is this coming Friday. Starts Fridays, Saturday, and Sunday at McCormick Place in Chicago. And you can go to thepeoplessummit.org. Speakers include Naomi Klein, Tulsi Gabbard, that's the congresswoman from Hawaii. I just saw that she is proposing some legislation. What was it about? Let me think about that. Well, hopefully I'll remember in a minute. Sorry.
It's not like it's television. It's okay.
Nothing like that. What was it? Anyway, it'll come to me. Roseanne DeMauro and Sean King. He's a journalist and social entrepreneur. So many other speakers, lots going on. There's many people from Champaign-Urbana going, so it's an exciting thing that's happening. I don't have the date of the upcoming for the next Progressive People's Potluck here, but we are going to have some audio from it later on in the show where we are celebrating some of the victories of the people in Champaign-Urbana and things that we've won locally. And just to remind ourselves that this isn't that the fights we fight are fights worth fighting, and they can be won.
And they can be shared. And the more people that join in to make things better, the greater the chance we have to make things better.
Absolutely. All right. There is going to be a celebration at the Douglas Branch Library called the, what's it called here? Oh, the National Juneteenth, which is celebrating 151 years since the Emancipation Proclamation reached Texas and freed the last of the slaves. Bring your family and friends to Douglas Park for summer fun and games sponsored by the Library Friends in the Champaign Park District. Juneteenth, the oldest known celebration commemorating the abolition of slavery in the United States, is one event you don't want to miss. Enjoy music and different vendors while learning about this important holiday. There's lots going on there. That's at the Champaign Park District's Douglas Branch Library. And that is on Saturday, this coming Saturday, from 12 to 3. So the 18th of June, Saturday from 12 to 3 at the Douglas Branch Library. Great place to interact with people of color. So, which is something we all have to kind of all as white people have to make an effort to do so that we can bridge those spaces. Wanted to make a couple of announcements about things going on in the GBLT community, LGBT community, and remember also, of course, the tragedy that happened this weekend with the 50 people that were assassinated down in the nightclub in Orlando. And just a heavy sigh on that. Most people have heard that news. How could you miss it? But there is a fundraiser for the Up Center Friday, June 17th. So this coming Friday, Up Center is a LGBT advocacy group, I think, basically. They run a center, and they have their annual Turn It Up event is a fundraising event that is going to be happening at the Accord in downtown Champaign on Friday, June 17th, from 7 to 11. There's a wide variety of musicians, spoken word artists, comedians, and more. And there are tickets available at the door, but you can get more information at TIU@unitingpride.org for questions or to perform. So I wanted to tell you about a Pride parade that's in September and a meeting that is happening to organize the Pride parade if you want to be involved in that, but I don't have a printout on it. I thought I did. Oh, here it is. Never mind. Pride planning meeting is this coming Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. at their offices, which is at 44 East Main Street, Suite 516. That's the Lincoln Building in downtown Champaign, just right down the street down there. 44 East Main Street. Saturday from 3 to 4, there's a planning meeting for the Pride parade and event, or if you want to be involved in it but can't make it to that meeting, email pride@unitingpride.org. And we've just got started with getting the CU Progressive calendar off the ground, and would love to have your participation in getting events on that calendar. We really we have heard from the progressive community that there is no comprehensive calendar of things that are going on in the area. There's no way for progressives to plan future events because they don't know what future events are already planned. So we're really going to make this a vibrant calendar. We have several volunteers already working on it. It's a Google calendar, so it's going to be easy for anybody to use and import. And all you need to do right now is go to this address. It's called, how you get to it is tinyurl.com. So tinyurl.com/CU Progressive. And that's going to take you to the progressive calendar. Once you get there, there will be a little icon down in the right hand side that's a little plus sign, and that will, if you click on that, it'll ask you if you want to subscribe to it so that you would be able to show it in all the rest of your Google calendars if you're a Google calendar kind of person. All right. So our main news story that we're going to be dealing with tonight has to do with Officer Gale of the Champaign City Police. And dang, where's my printout on that? There it is. Chris is going to cover this story for us. He's been researching it. Chris Evans is a independent journalist here in town who is a dynamite researcher, and he's also an activist with the IMC. He's, as you can see by his T-shirt here, he belongs to Radio Free Urbana, as well as helping me here out on WEFT. And he is part of the Build Programs, Not Jails coalition and organization, which, by the way, meets on Monday nights at the very same time we have our program.
Tonight at the IMC, beginning at 6:30 to 8:30, Build Programs, Not Jails will be meeting. If you go to the Independent Media Center, it's in between Lincoln Square Village and the County Courthouse in Urbana. And just come on in through the double red doors, and we'll be happy to see you.
Right. It's a really, really important organization, Build Programs, Not Jails, because I like to remind people that without some pushback, we will have a new jail. There's just almost no doubt about that, that the county board is moving that way. You might have, you might hear some people saying that that's not necessarily on the table, but the studies have been done. They tried to pay the architect to design it already, basically. So they hired a consultant that was basically a designer. And they got pushback, and they pulled back from it and demanded that we had a different kind of consultant. I don't have all the details on that, but
it's a whole show in itself.
It is. We will do a show on the Champaign County Jail and get James Kilgore in here, who is helping to work with the Build Programs, Not Jails. He's the one who's organizing some of the meetings. And Dottie, what is Dottie's last name?
Vera Weiss.
Yeah, Vera. Okay. And she's really active too. Several other people, Barbara Kessel and others. So we will have them in soon.
Christina Kahn. There's a group of dedicated people. And as Margaret Mead once said, never underestimate the world can change with a handful of dedicated people.
Because in fact, that's the only thing that's ever changed it. Absolutely. So the lead-in story here is Champaign police officer receives light sentence for sex crimes. And the reason I asked Chris to come in, he's got a little different take on it than I had anticipated. But I like this take that we're going to talk about, which is why police officers get less harsh sentencing in our county than others do, than the average citizen does.
In this particular story is another example of the fact that all police officers in Champaign County have enjoyed favoritism by our current state's attorney.
Right.
Why that is not necessarily been revealed. Many can speculate why that is.
Right.
But that it is has been a consistent pattern throughout the history or the tenure of Julia Reitz.
And she's been in office for how long?
Since 2004.
Okay. So the reason that really this happened not that, was it just in September, May 26th that he was sentenced?
Correct.
Okay. So it was pretty recent, just 18 days ago. But the reason we're bringing it up now also is because of what happened out at Stanford and just the flurry of, you know, Facebook and social media that happened around the fact that the young man who was a swimmer, who was an athlete at Stanford, who got convicted of raping a young woman behind a dumpster and then he was accosted by two passing foreign exchange students, I believe, who saw what was happening. He ran. She spent a year in court defending herself. And then what happened was the judge gave the young man 6 months in jail with credit for good time served, and he was going to be out in less than 3 months, basically. And so then the some of the judge's comments were outrageous because they were like, oh, if you know, it would destroy his future kind of thing, which I actually have sat in a room before with a police officer here in Champaign County, an ex-police officer, who basically told me that he often, if he was on campus, we were talking about the drug laws at that time. He said he basically didn't like to arrest people on campus because it might destroy their future. I'm like, well, it pretty much destroys everybody's future when you get a felony, you know, like not just the folks on campus. But this was just another example of that complete justification of that some people have different, the disparity in sentences is somehow reconciled in people's minds, how different.
How? Like, how could it be?
Well, if you think that some people have a future and some people don't a future, then you separate that.
That's the mentality and the kind of under the radar processes that has yet to be really discussed in the public forum by the state's attorney and by the police department.
Yes.
That they are applying different standards of law and different amounts of law,
yes,
to different people for different reasons. And even, you know, the same trigger of facts. And tonight's story about Officer Gale points to the fact that anyone else accused the way Mr. Gale was accused would not be enjoying only 6 months in the county jail,
right,
the Piatt County Jail.
Right.
And it's a very serious thing when those represented by the Public Defender's Office, I'm getting to the end of the story here, but those represented by the Public Defender's Office do not get the same lenient treatment and considerations and mercy,
right,
that, say, police officers do,
right,
say, those in the white middle class.
Well, not only that, but the opposite is what should be happening. Police should be held to a higher standard than the average citizen, by all means, especially in cases of, when you're, well, in all cases, but they're not on duty. They're this is clearly rape. And so let's talk about the story. So I'm going to start it and then you can jump into. So 18 days ago on May 26, 32-year-old Champaign police officer Jared Gale was sentenced to 4 years of probation and 6 months in the Piatt County Jail for sex crimes he committed against three former girlfriends. The lenient treatment given to Officer Gale continues a pattern of local prosecutors offering favorable treatment to members of law enforcement, and whether or not prosecutors are willing to protect area women from violence that is epidemic in Champaign County. Go ahead.
Officer Gale was originally charged a year ago in Champaign County with two separate cases involving two different victims. Gale was charged in the case of the first victim with two Class X felony counts of aggravated criminal sexual assault causing bodily harm, two Class 1 felonies of aggravated criminal sexual assault using force, and a Class 2 felony of aggravated domestic battery. In the second case from Champaign County involving a second victim, Gale was charged with one Class X felony of aggravated criminal sexual assault causing bodily harm, one Class 1 felony of criminal sexual assault using force, and a Class 2 felony of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. At the same time Gale was facing charges in Champaign County, Piatt County prosecutors charged Gale with sex crimes committed against a third victim from Monticello, where Gale faced two Class 1 felonies counts of criminal sexual assault and a single count of a Class 2 felony of aggravated criminal sexual abuse.
Okay, before you go on, so our eyes aren't just glazing over here, sure, because it gets, you know, like, okay, how many counts and what felonies and all of that. Right. I just want to read the victim impact statement just to inject this here before we go on and tell you how much he didn't get. In an emotionally read victim impact statement, one of Gale's Champaign County victims addressed him by his first name. Remember, they were his girlfriends, and told him, he looked into her eyes, saw terror on her face, heard her screaming, and watched her sob. She says, "You listened to me beg for you to stop. You felt my body struggling to get away from you. You listened to the words no over and over again," she said. "Did any of this make you stop? No. In fact, you threatened me. You suffocated me. You restrained me. You injured me. And most disturbingly, you took pleasure in it," she said. The woman said Gale anally raped her and that she will... that it will, quote, never be erased from my memory. But she also said she makes a choice every day to rid feelings of betrayal, helplessness, and fear. And in spite of your efforts, I know that I'm worthy of love. I'm proud of myself and the other victims for overcoming fear, being brave, and for opening ourselves up to the public criticism on the hopes that future women will be protected from you. So I just wanted to read that and just to say thank you to her and the other two women who I'm sure are just one in a long line of women he has done this too. I know that one of my friends told me that she's a realtor, and she said that Gale, I think it was that he owned property that she was showing or something like that, but his personality came through so clear, just like, "Do you know who I am? I'm a cop. I can make anything happen. You have nothing. Nobody will believe anything you say. I can make anything happen." And that was his attitude, and I'm sure that was his attitude here with these women, that he just thought he could get by with it. So in total, go ahead, Kiss.
Oh, sure. In total, Gale was charged with 11 sex crime felonies. Gale was able to post $25,000 toward a quarter of a million dollar bond. He was also able to afford prominent defense attorney and City of Champaign City Council member Tom Bruno. After Gale bonded out, he was placed on paid administrative leave in accordance with the police union contract negotiated with the City of Champaign. Piatt County's state's attorney, Dana Rhodes, attempted to get Gale declared sexually dangerous in order to get Gale back into custody, but Prosecutor Rhodes withdrew that motion after two court-appointed evaluators found that Gale did not meet the criteria to be declared sexually dangerous.
Any idea what that is? What that criteria is?
It would be that of the evaluators, and you would have to read their report to understand what those criteria were.
Okay.
But isn't it interesting that you feel like Gale is sexually dangerous and the evaluators did not? You know.
Well,
I mean, right. You know, and the victim impact statement that you read, clearly she feels that he's a danger.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And then just as a note, don't let it pass that Tom Bruno, City of Champaign Council member, represented him. So right. Talk about a crazy little twist there. So he is a City of Champaign police officer being represented by a council member of the City of Champaign. That's so wrong.
Who as city council member, negotiated the police contract with the union that gave the protections that Gail enjoyed, particularly the administrative paid leave. You got
to
understand.
Do you know if he ever had to pay that back or anything? Do you think that that happens?
Yeah,
don't know?
Don't know.
Yeah.
That was never mentioned in the News Gazette.
We'll have to put that on our list of things to check into.
That's right. So after year-long negotiations, prosecutors from both counties agreed to dismiss all of the Class X felonies that would have required Gail to serve a minimum 6-year prison sentence and allowed Gail to plead guilty to 3 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. In addition to the 6-month jail sentence in the Piatt County Jail, Gail would also be placed on the Illinois Sex Offender Registry list for life and would not be allowed to own a firearm. Because Gail can no longer handle firearms, and because Gail cannot travel within 500 feet of the victim's residence, Champaign Police Chief Anthony Cobb terminated Gail's employment as a police officer on May 4th. Cobb had earlier awarded Gail the Champaign Police Officer of the Year Award for 2014.
Yeah, irony there.
Yes.
State's Attorney Julia Reitz told the News Gazette that bringing Gail to trial would not have guaranteed closure because trials can be risky, as Reitz described the allegation as, quote, very much he said, she said, end quote. One of Gail's attorneys, Evan Bruno, also spoke with the News Gazette, calling the plea agreement, quote, a very favorable deal for both sides, end quote. Bruno told the News Gazette he doesn't know what Gail's plans are after he gets out of jail. The case of Officer Jared Gail continues a long-standing pattern of lenient treatment from the Champaign County State's Attorney toward police officers who break the law. The Gail case again shows that in Champaign County, defendants who are white, middle class, and have the resources to hire a quality private attorney are more likely to obtain lighter sentences than those who are low income or African American and must rely on the overwhelmed Champaign Public Defender's Office for Legal Representation.
Yep.
Yep. Well, we don't have the statistics here to show all of that, but Chris has looked up the statistics.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I really should say that this is observations. This is derived. These conclusions are derived from observations I made as a courtroom sketch artist and as a journalist who's gone to the courthouse many times. There has been no comparative study between the races of defendants and their sentences ever in Champaign County.
Interesting.
That is never recorded in the final compilation of statistics in the, you know, that the criminal justice system collects.
Do you think that that's on the table for the racial justice task force?
Okay, I'll make sure the racial justice task force will do that. I mean, I think it should be. Yes.
Yeah. So the racial justice task force, just as an aside, is appointed by the Champaign County. It's just formed this year. It's non-funded, completely volunteer operated without any criteria. I hear that they are trying to do good things, so and we'll try to keep you abreast of what's going on with that. But it's a completely non-funded, it's a racial justice task force that the Champaign County has formed, but it didn't have a specific target of like where we're going to look at. We need to get this studied.
They are trying to get focus, and they will have a community town hall meeting June 23rd, and I believe it's at, either Love Corner Church or Douglas.
We'll make sure get that on the calendar. June 23rd coming up?
June 23rd, and the public is invited to tell their stories about the criminal justice system.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. State's Attorney Julia Reitz has historically, through her tenure since 2004, gone out of her way to not send a single police officer to prison for the serious crimes some officers commit. In 2005, then Urbana Police Officer Kurt Hort looked up the home address of a convenience store clerk he met while in uniform and on duty, drove his marked Scott Court to the clerk's home, and raped the victim on her own couch. Hjort was not arrested for the crime because Hjort was scheduled to attend State's Attorney Julie Reitz's wedding to a police officer. A special prosecutor was appointed who declined to file any criminal charges against Hjort. We're going to come back to the idea of special prosecutors in a minute. In 2009, Julie Reitz failed to find any criminal charges against Chief Finney of the Champaign Police Force or Officer Daniel Norbitz, who both admitted to investigators that they attempted to wrestle two 15-year-old teenagers while their guns were drawn. An unarmed Kiwani Carrington was shot dead within 8 seconds of officers arriving to the scene. And we all still have the reverberations of that in our community, for sure. In 2011, Reitz failed to prosecute Champaign Police Officer John Lieb or Matt Rush for the brutal and unjustifiable beating of then 18-year-old Calvin Miller, son of local activist Martell Miller. He was one of our first guests on this show. And his moving testimony about what happened to his son is really touching. As recently as 2016, Reitz refused to file any charges against embattled Champaign Police Officer Matt Rush, who was fired for excessive force in 4 separate incidents and whose violent behavior was documented on videotape. Of course, this is a story we've been covering regularly that I think off the top of my head, maybe the city has paid out $300,000 so far. Maybe it's even more than that. I'm not positive.
I'm remembering $300,000,
right? And you know that he keeps, and he's been fired twice by the chief, who is Chief Anthony Cobb. Finney is no longer the police chief. Anthony Cobb is, and he's been fired twice. But the Fraternal Order of Police keeps defending him and bringing him back, even though Reitz will not allow him to testify because his testimony is known to be false because he's lied.
Right.
But yet she won't prosecute him.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though she had that videotape of him beating up, you saw the one that you,
Precious.
That affected you a lot was the really bizarre scene of him throwing a woman to the ground, punching her in the face, and then straddling her over her belly for over 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was a disgusting view of sexual violence, actually. And you may say that it was just him restraining her, but if you would just watched it and thought about what he was, he had no business being on top of her, none whatsoever. And you can't tell me he wasn't, there wasn't some weird sexual thing going on there. So that's my opinion.
Well, what we can say is he should have been charged with a crime. Anybody, any other citizen doing those same behaviors would have been charged with a crime.
Yes, he was beating this woman up. That's what he was doing. So do you want to just go back and say that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those, represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. There's a lot to say about this. And one of the things that we want to stress is that this thing about special prosecutors is things that's it's often used. Like, well, we're going to hire a special prosecutor. No, we voted you, Julia, to be the prosecutor here. You're the state's attorney. You're supposed to be representing the people's interests of Champaign County. And the people's interest is to not have rogue cops on the street. And we know that we do. That's a fact. Matt Rush, we paid out. Hjort, we paid out, right? In the city of Urbana. Yes, the city of Urbana paid out on Officer Hjort. So, you know, there isn't any reason if we're paying out money that they shouldn't be charged. And that's pretty much the bottom line. If they're...
I could see a state's attorney who has a personal relationship with the defendant, a prior personal relationship, or a state's attorney that uses this officer in a lot of cases as a witness and has developed a working relationship or has, I could see a state's attorney needing
a special prosecutor.
But what we're finding all across the country is a need for the public to be protected and prosecutors who are willing to prosecute a police officer. And we don't see that across the country.
And so what, just to make sure that we have this story straight and that everybody understands it, that he got a plea deal. So right. Gail got a plea deal.
That's right.
He pled to being guilty to
3 aggravated criminal sexual abuse charges, and that is the behavior that he was convicted of specifically. It's kind of graphic, but he is charged, and let's see, in what, Gail is said to have overpowered a woman he was dating who declined to have sex with him, and when they went to bed and made... he made contact with her anus through force, causing her a laceration that bled. In another case, Gail said to have overpowered a woman he had formerly dated and was reconciling with.
Reconciling.
But who, thank you. But who also refused him sex, making contact with her sex organ while she told him not to, and causing her bruising, soreness, and soft tissue damage. So this is kind of ugly stuff, and I'm just giving right. you the ugly legal stuff.
This is what he admitted to doing then.
That's what he admitted, thus dismissing all the other things that he did. And, mm-hmm. and there were, remember, there were 11 counts of specific behaviors that he did. He also choked these women. He choked them till they passed out,
mm-hmm.
And there was a series of other sex acts that he did mm-hmm. that were despicable and painful,
mm-hmm.
and
they came forth and they were willing to testify.
Not at first. You do have to remember that these cases happened years ago,
mm-hmm.
but after
the first one came
Vice
forth.
After Vice President Biden came to talk about "It's on Us," the "It's on Us" campaign against sexual violence, about people reporting and respecting those that are victims of sexual violence. These 3 women were inspired by Vice President Biden's speech.
Really?
To actually, this is what the News Gazette reported now.
Okay.
So take it with that. But they were inspired to deal with their own trauma, and surprisingly, I have to, say this, that prosecutors, even though he was a police officer and officer of the year in 2014,
mm-hmm.
Decided to go with 11 serious, felonies against him. Mm-hmm. And so he was facing, a lot of time in prison. Mm-hmm.
And instead he got 6 months.
He got 6 months.
Mm-hmm. There you go. All right, you are listening to CU Progressive News. We're going to end with a thing we call We Can, which is some footage, audio footage of, go listen. Got my auxiliary on here.
So I thank you for that. Next, I want to pass it over to, so we're going to get to the Illinois stuff in a second. But each week we do something called Yes We Can CU. Actually, I have a hashtag in the space, and it all.
Well, flat rate of $4.08 between 12 and.
Good. I'm going to record this too, so if you don't mind.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so you're going to tell us about a victory that you experienced recently. Tell us what the victory was first.
Is it on right now?
It is.
Okay. My name's Juan Jill Harvey, and I work with Representative Carol Ammons to lower the cost of phone calls from people in prison to their families. Before, there was a rate of, flat rate of $4.08 between 12 and 30 minutes, and we capped it to about 7 cents a minute, so cutting that price in half.
And what? Yay. And I know you have a history, as I do, of having a family in prison and experiencing firsthand how difficult it is to live when you have to pay these exorbitant phone charges. But what took it from the personal to the political for you? How did you decide to become active, or how were you drawn in?
I'm a part of the Ripple Effect, where we reach out to people who are in prison and we send letters. There was one time we had a big gathering and they wanted me to talk about how it was with both my parents incarcerated and talking to them. And at that moment, there were a bunch of other activists there that who reached out to me, and they wanted me to go and talk to the FCC, which is like the political level. And I went there in October, and we talked to the FCC, and we passed the law to make it 11 cents a minute. So in the state, we have it 7 cents a minute, but it should be 11 cents. So that's another victory, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And so what... Were there times during the process where you felt like this is never going to happen, or were you always hopeful?
I was always hopeful because I thought that it was reasonable. Like, there's no way that a family should be paying like $4.08 to talk to someone for like 16 minutes with horrible reception, mind you. You can't hear them sometimes, or the phone drops, but you're still charged the full duration of the time.
Right. Right. And what difference did it make in the lives of your family members to be able to have that conversation with them?
The conversation while they were in prison?
Yeah, or with for you?
Well, when I was younger, it was very beneficial because I was a kid growing up with both parents incarcerated. Well, since they're not there anymore, I do have family members who have sons or daughters who are actually experiencing that now, so I know that they're happy.
Yeah.
Yay
yeah.
For Wanjel. Yeah.
Thank you. Sean, you're next. Want to say your name?
I'm Sean Gilmore. I'm a lecturer in the Department of English at the University of Illinois, and I'm also the president of the Non-Tenure Faculty Coalition.
How did you get to be president?
I foolishly created a union, which is the thing that started 3 or 4 years ago when the non-tenure faculty on campus, which is about 500 of the faculty, came together to form a union, which was certified in 2014. I have been its first president, and I will have another year until May when I'll be completing my completed term.
Right. So non-tenured track faculty mm-hmm. just seemed like it was a given. It's in almost every university yep. across the country. You got your tenured track. Mm-hmm. They're the important people. You got your students coming in, and then you got all this layer in between of people right. who were basically being used right. For cheap labor and temporary labor. Right.
Yeah, so the non-tenure faculty has grown proportionally on almost every campus. Our campus, it's about 20% of the standing faculty and teaches about 40% of the credit hours, give or take. Depends on how you want to count that. We'd like to count it a little more. But the deal is that the tenure track faculty, because they have a long-standing relationship to the administrative structure, often are the ones who get any benefits or the ones who actually, you know, accrue the power in an institution. And what are sometimes called adjuncts or clinical faculty or contingent faculty, or here just non-tenure faculty, have been the stopgap for that, right? So as the class sizes have grown, undergraduates have come in, someone had to teach them all, and that's how they grew. At this university, over the last 10 years, tenure track numbers have been stagnant. They've been at replacement amounts. Non-tenure track numbers have grown by about 25%.
So how did you come from this little kernel of an idea that a bunch of you are probably bitching at a bar somewhere, right?
That's how these things start.
We shouldn't be treated this way anymore.
It does start at a bar. That's where all good things start. Part of it was that we have a lot of members who have been here a long time. So about half of those 500 people have been with the university for at least 10 years or more. Not all is non-tenure faculty. That's sort of complicated. But, you know, that's 250 people who are long-term employees, basically. So they started to recognize the sort of structural problem, and not by the rhetoric that the administration would just unilaterally fix things of its own accord, which is sometimes what is used to solve the problem of non-tenure faculty. And then a few years ago, probably starting in about 2012, we started exploring, along with the Campus Faculty Association, IFT, which is the Illinois Federation of Teachers, AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, whether or not we could actually form a bargaining unit. And at the time, there was hope that both the tenure track and non-tenure track would unionize at the same time. They're still on their side working on that on their side. But what sustained out of that was a non-tenure track bargaining unit. And so in the spring of 2014, we went around and got signed cards from a majority of people in the unit and got them certified.
Uh-huh. What politicized you? Was this your kind of like first political action, or did you have some interest in labor going in?
So I was a graduate student unionist. I went on strike with GEO in 2009 in front of the English building, which I just was on strike of a couple months ago in front of again. And I have long sort of standing political commitments. I'm originally from Missouri, which does not let most of its educational sector unionize. So there is sort of a seeing some new possibilities in states like Illinois in which you can actually unionize across most of the sectors. It is somewhat tricky with our Educational Labor Relations Board because of the way it's composed at the moment. They're mostly Republican appointees. So we have part of what has helped motivate our members is that we know that we have to be a strong union and one that has solidarity with other educational unions, but also with service sector unions, labor unions, because the legal support around us is not as firm as it actually is in some other states.
Gotcha. Does anybody else have any questions for Sean?
Sure. Were you ever worried that you were going to lose?
You don't even know.
All right. So you were listening to CU Progressive News.
So I have not been as concerned about losing my job as some other activists have. And it's due in part because the department I work in is fairly pro-labor. The English department on our campus is known for its attention to this. Our department head walked the strike.
So
that's not as big a concern. So I wasn't worried about retaliation on that side. We did have some people put themselves very far out on limbs. And part of what's important to understand is that until this contract that we just signed, non-tenure faculty were on year-to-year contracts with no expectation of renewal. And
voices, they're outside the door. Short stints in county or up on fifth floor. Methadone, strip clubs, a counterfeit bill. An old script that no one will fill. Rainy day cyanide pill. Bumming a cigarette, turning a trick. Never feels high, just tries not to feel sick. Trading her food stamps and riding out the longer dry spells. Other stuff she never tells. It's a tenderloin lullaby, mad dogs will growl. Garbage trucks rattle and sirens still howl. Bones may be brittle, blood scarlet but thin. It's all about teeth, about skin. Now hush, hear the heartbeat within.
It's 7 o'clock. You're tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Time now for Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater. We'll begin with another episode. I believe it's episode 23 of Blame It on Hoboken. Then a bit of fun with Pedro Pablo Sacristán, courtesy